Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Hello, listeners of Time. Guess what? We Lorehounds liked The Path to the Spear, the episode 4 of season 3 of The Wheel of Time, so much that we decided to do 2 extra episodes related to all that juicy lore we got dropped on us this week. So subscribers and season pass holders already have access to a lorecast about the timeline of the Wheel of Time universe, where John and I talk about everything from the creation of the world to ages yet to come, putting the events revealed this week, as well as all the other events seen or referred to in the show so far, in the context of the millennia of known in-universe history. For this special lorecast, I'm joined instead by Mark from Nevermind the Music, the podcast that explores the intersection of music and psychology, and he has put on his music professor hat to talk through diegetic music in the Wheel of Time TV show. So this includes the songs we've heard sung by characters in previous seasons, to the revelation of the song sought for centuries by the Tinkers and revealed this week. If you're listening to this episode on the public feed, then you will hear the first part of this episode, where Mark and I talk about the in-universe music of the first 2 seasons. If you have access to the Supercast or Patreon feeds, as in if you're a subscriber or season pass holder, then I recommend listening in those feeds to this episode, as that's where you'll get the full conversation, both the past seasons and the implications of the new musical reveal this week. But either way, please enjoy this extra lorecast. Okay, let's jump right into the conversation with Mark from Nevermind the Music. Surprise! We're doing an extra lorecast this week. So Alicia here with a second lorecast for episode 4, because this episode deserves it. And this time, instead of John, I have a special guest, Mark from Nevermind the Music. Welcome, Mark. Thank you for joining.
Thanks so much. Happy to finally be here. This has been a lot of podcasting for y'all for the last week and a half.
Yeah. Amazon really screwed us, but Disney's trying to screw us worse with Andor. So.
Oh, yeah. That schedules.
But we've got plans. We've got plans.
Well, it's I know you all had screeners, so at least you could do a little bit of it ahead. But I have to say, keeping up with it, watching 4 episodes in a week is tricky, but also listening to podcasts about those, it's been fun, but it's been a lot of Wheel of Time in my life this last week.
Isn't that the best time though? The Wheel of Time.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is going to happen again in a future life, so yeah. I might as well practice now.
So you are a book reader, and by the way, we are doing, as usual with these episodes, spoilers through season 3, episode 4, as this is coming out. No future book spoilers. I don't think we'd need them. But yeah, you actually were really excited. You're like, I need to talk about the Wheel of Time. Let's figure out a way to talk about the Wheel of Time. So what's your background with this world?
My background, and some of this maybe I can save for another, if I'm on another episode, to not get to, because I have weird intersections with it kind of throughout the years, but I've been reading this since my 8th grade friend Mike handed me Isle of the World when I was, whatever, 13 or whatever, and at that point I think maybe the first 6 had come out, and then maybe Crown of Swords came out right after I read that from the library when it had just come out or something. So that was a long time ago. And then there's been just fits and starts. I think I probably have read The Eye of the World 3.5 times. With the half being a really bad breakup that made me just like nihilistic and I just put it down in the middle of it.
Right.
But and then only came back to the series with the Sanderson books, and I just read it all as one, my last reread. So my last reread was probably finished in 2014 or 15. So I haven't read it since then.
Okay.
But I go way back with this series. Like, it's probably my favorite fantasy series. I know it has its flaws that everybody talks about, but I connect with it a lot more, I think, than I do some of the other ones I've read, though some of that might just be age. Like, I hadn't read The Fellowship of the Ring when I read Eye of the World, so it didn't feel like, you know, the Death Star coming back in episode 9 to me. It felt just like, whoa, this kind of amazing adventure. And sort of coincided with me starting to read for fun, honestly, as opposed to skimming for a book report that I didn't want to do when I was in elementary school and middle school.
Yeah, see, I did read Lord of the Rings first, but I still, Wheel of Time is my favorite world, but because I think it feels so lived in, you know? It feels so real.
Yeah, and I'd read The Hobbit, and I'd read Lloyd Alexander. I'd read fantasy before that, but that was the first one that was, drew me in, you know, and taught me all sorts of valuable lessons about how women talk and how men and women are essentially different and cannot ever cry. Sorry, I
don't love that part, but yeah.
No, those are the... I remember, like, before I even really critically thought about any of that, I remember talking to one of my wife's friends about it, my girlfriend's friends at the time when I was early 20s, and just, oh, you read The Wheel of Time? She's like, that's the worst book I've ever... He's never met a woman in his life. And it was the first time, and that goes to show, like, I hadn't done my second reread. Mm-hmm. I'd only done my 13, 14-year-old reread. So it was interesting, like, that's we'll talk about that maybe in non-episode 4 podcast, because it's not really as relevant today. But yeah, I go way back. I love this series.
I mean, yeah, for me, it strikes like it's flawed, as you said. You know, the gender thing is my biggest issue with it because it comes up so much. But it strikes that nice balance between like Tolkien and George R. R. Martin, where there's still, it's dark and gritty often, but there is still room for hope and for, I mean, not that there isn't friendship in Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire, but you know what I mean. There's more warmth in The Wheel of Time.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think since I can see you on the screen, but the audience cannot, I'm going to note that you have a braid, but you are not twiddling
tugging
it nervously
it.
And tugging on it in frustration at the ignorance of the man you're speaking to right now. So we're not totally playing to Robert Jordan.
Yeah, it depends how this conversation goes. Yeah. So what do you think of the show so far?
So the show has been up and down. I enjoyed the first season a lot because of just seeing the choices they made. I loved some of the choices they made in terms of kind of modernizing it, frankly. Obviously it's a little rough at the back half, the last couple episodes in particular. Season 2 was a lot better. I really enjoyed it. I think there are only a couple things that are questionable. This season, I think, is just far better. I think everything about the season is far better. I've enjoyed every single episode. I think episode 4, I don't know, I doubt my trustworthiness because this is also so anticipated, this story. Like, I don't know what someone who's non-reader is going to think, but I think that was one of the best episodes of fantasy TV I've ever watched.
Yeah,
like,
period.
I think that stands up to... It's just the character, the story, but also, I mean, I'd love to see what somebody like David, who knows what he's talking about filmography and cinematography, would think. Like, the spinning around of Moraine's visions of the future, just it's mind-blowing. And, like, I find myself, I'm the music guy, and I'm going, wow, what was the music like? I was not listening to the music or anything, and I bet that was really important to my emotional experience, but I was just so drawn in and pulled in by just the spectacle and the gravitas of what I was seeing, and just, I didn't pause it or anything, but I'm just like, oh, Lan's on fire. Okay, now they put, who is that? Is that Lanfear? Is that Rand?
Right.
And it was just so engrossing. And again, I'm a longtime book reader, so I don't know how much of that is influencing it. Like, is this too confusing? Because I found myself having to be like, wait, so the Tuatha On split up before they picked up the, like, there's this, like.
Yeah, there were two splits, yeah.
It's super confusing, and what is a civilian going to think, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I thought the episode was wonderful. I think The Shadow Rising, which this comes from, was a, I remember being 13 or 14 and being, like, super, I felt a little bit like I was it Muradin? What's his name? Like
Muradin, yeah.
I wasn't quite pulling my eyes out, but
right.
I kind of was upset by what I read. I couldn't, my young mind couldn't kind of handle this kind of, you know, changing of a character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think back to when my oldest child was like 5 and watching some cartoon and the police were chasing, like, I don't know, it was like a Bigfoot character or something. And the police or these Mounties or something were chasing him. And my son, he was like 4, is like disturbed by the fact that the police were the bad guys.
Mm.
And like, I just think, and I'm like, guess what? Just get ready, son.
Yeah.
This is the late 2010s. You got
right.
some learning to do, kid. But like, I'm thinking of that kind of innocence of being mm-hmm. shocked by something being flipped on its side, that it kind of disturbed me. And then when I reread that book when I was 20 something, I was like, this is the best book. Like, this is the best moment, one of the best moments in the series. And so I'm just imagining this episode, and I'm talking a lot, and we're not even talking about what we're supposed to be talking about. This is like, this could be the fulcrum on which the entire series kind
right.
of turns, right? And that's why I'm kind of following these stupid anecdotes of me as a teenager versus me
no,
as an adult,
yeah.
and then me as a super adult reading it 10 years ago, where I actually like really got the significance of it because I was reading the whole thing, that I feel like that episode might be doing that. And I hope that mm-hmm. lands in a way that, even if it lands with the non-book readers in the way that it did as for me as a 13-year-old, that was
yeah.
at least emotionally effective. Though
yeah.
maybe you don't have 1,000 pages of identity about the Aiel to mm-hmm. reckon with, which could be a negative. Anyways, I've heard your thoughts on it, but anything you want to, I don't want to hog the
no,
spotlight
I mean,
too much on this. I know you loved it too.
Picking up what you were putting down, well, first of all, I have gone down a rabbit hole of watching reactions to this episode. I mean, I do that with The Wheel of Time a lot, but with this episode in particular, I just have loved seeing how people are responding to it and seeing how the book readers who, even the book readers who were very anti the show, losing their minds, seeing non-book readers respond really well to it. And I do have to say there's, you know, it depends on the person. Some people are really intuitive and really put the pieces together, and other people are like, oh, wait, so, but it's going backwards and, you know, and it's taking mm-hmm. them a moment longer, but still across the board, when the boar opens up, everyone's like, holy shit, you know, and when the Moraine's visions start flipping, turning the wheel. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that moment, it's one of those moments where I think you start to wonder, wait, is this going to be a sci-fi show? When the boar opens.
It's secret sci-fi. Yeah. We have time of secret sci-fi.
We're kind of staying in the fantasy vibe for every other scene, but mm-hmm. there's something about this that is, like, you could do, if you did an Age of Legends prequel
right.
series / sequel series,
yeah.
it would not be fantasy in the classic way.
Mm-hmm.
It would be more like Foundation or something like that,
right,
which
true.
Is just wild. So yeah, that I'm also curious, maybe we talk about this on another episode, but like, how are the ratings for all of this? Like, you know, if this gets canceled.
Yeah. I'm going to be devastated.
What if he stopped writing after The Shadow Rising? Okay, come on.
So everybody show clips of this episode to everyone, you know, who likes, you know, big, spectacle television. And I think it's going to help, though. Severance just wrapped up, you know, it was a major thing that was taking up a lot of people's time, you know, right. and investment in pop culture. And I'm hoping that now with this episode, the word gets out, because I have not seen a bad review of this episode anywhere.
Yeah. It stacks up with Rings of Power. Like, this looks like $1 million. Like, it's funny because we're following, what, two characters the entire time, almost one character the entire time. So it's sort of a bottle episode.
Yeah.
But how many different sets, how many different locations, different costumes? They had to think of just the Moiraine and Lanfear killing each other over and over again. They had to shoot how many scenes just with different costumes for half of them at least, and different scenes. Like, I can't imagine the work this took. This is monumental achievement. Like, and if this show isn't considered for some of the kind of technical side, at least artistic side stuff in the Emmys,
then, yeah.
I mean, what are they? That means nobody is watching it in that.
It was M. Will on Blue Sky said, if they don't give Sharon Gillum, the costume designer, if she doesn't get nominated for an Emmy, they should stop giving out Emmys.
Right. Or there's something we can't imagine that's about to come down the the path this year.
Yeah. But there is always a snobbishness towards genre TV, which is why I really hope this takes off as it should. And, you know, it's interesting also that you mention your experience reading it over your life, because that is something that comes up a lot and it's going to hook into later. So we're here to talk about the music, but I want to say from my perspective, like the first time I read the books, I was totally looking through the eyes of Egwene. Now, when I go back and read, I identify with Moiraine the most.
That I have not reread this since I became a parent.
Mm.
So I'm really interested what that would do. But yeah, who you identify with, like, for me, I don't know. Let's save this for another conversation.
Yeah.
I have thoughts about all that, because that also is an evolution in over my three complete sort of rereads. It's only one full reread, but I think we should say that, though, because we're supposed to talk about...
Okay, but it does... Yeah. I mean, in a way, we're going to talk about this because at the end, we're going to be talking about the evolution of a musical concept. And so that brings us back to what we are ostensibly here to talk about, other than, of course, the deserved gushing over episode four, which absolutely deserves 15 minutes of gushing. But before we get into the major thing that happened musically this episode is we seem to have gotten an answer for a question about the song. And we're going to get to that. And that's going to be the bulk. That's going to be on the subscriber side of the episode for the most part, although we'll start to talk about it here. But I just wanted to take a step back before this current episode and ask you, what do you think about the use of music in the show so far up to this point? And we're talking in this case about diegetic music, not the score. Although I think the diegetic music, does that still go credit to Lauren Balfe? I'm sorry, correct me, someone, if I should be crediting other composers for these. But
so, like, in terms of the series comp, so, like, when I was looking up, like, listening to some of these and looking up the lyrics and stuff like that, for example, The Man Who Can't Forget, that song was credited as written by, I don't remember, I didn't write down his name, the man who had written that episode.
So
did the melody get written by that person
probably
too,
the
or
lyrics.
Did the series composer, or is it just the lyrics? Like, I didn't find a lot on that. So I'm assuming there's a lot of overlap between the songs and the score in terms of the musical authorship, but the writers are also in there. And I think that's interesting because there's so much music, so many song lyrics in the books.
Right.
And those are not used for these songs.
Not yet, right? At least. Yeah.
The Man Who Can't Forget, Sing for Manetherin are not the songs that are in. You know, so it's interesting to me that they chose to do that, because they could have clearly given us, because to people that aren't book readers, like, this has a lot of music like The Lord of the Rings does, but to me, it's used in a completely different way. There isn't, let's sit around the fire and someone's going to sing a song about Beren and Luthien or whatever. It's more like Matt has these three song lyrics that keep running in his head for half of a book as he's like coming to terms with something, or like, you know, like he keeps thinking of Jack of the Shadows or whatever. It's it's not like they're sitting around singing the songs. It's more like almost like the songs are in their heads.
Well, that's true. But then also the from the first book, the boys, Matt and Rand specifically, they play music in taverns to earn money so that they can travel, which is something they don't have much time to go into that in the show.
Yeah, I want to come back to that actually later once we talk about the meaning. And I think to the non-book readers, since we're not spoiling here, you said something about the song. I think just people need to realize this ending is not something we book readers knew the answer to. This what is the song that the traveling people are always talking about? We didn't know. And the show is giving us an answer for that. And so it's kind of crazy. It doesn't matter whether we know or not, but it's kind of crazy just to think of that kind of having some clarity now to the extent that it does.
Well, also it hooks into a popular fan theory that was debunked by Brandon Sanderson, who again wrote the last books for anyone who doesn't know after Robert Jordan passed away. But we'll get into that. But yeah, so in universe, we definitely you brought up "Dance with Jack of the Shadows." I think that is like the number one song that people want to see on screen, and I think that would probably be like a next season kind of thing, to be honest. Other than that, I don't think that there are many songs that most readers could immediately call to mind. I wrote down some more common ones like Wash the Spears as an Aiel song, a Maidens of the Spear songs. The Wind That Shakes the Willow, Forward the Lion, that's a Caemlyn March song, Coming Home from Tarwyn's Gap. So yeah, these are all regularly used, but I think if you asked the random book reader on the street, name a Wheel of Time song, they'd all say Dance with Jack of the Shadows.
That's the hit single. Yeah.
That's the hit single. Yeah.
And because it's used to represent things in somebody's character arc, right?
Right. It's Matt's one hit wonder. Yeah.
What exactly it represents, I don't remember, but it's burned in my brain at least partially. Yeah.
Well, I remember there's a hand involved, maybe a color.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
But yeah, okay. So there were then two in-universe songs used in season one that were sung by people, and you were kind enough to clip them for us. So let's give a quick listen to the first one that we heard in episode two, I believe it was, Sing for Manetherin or Weep for Manetherin. And this
Sing
is
how I saw it credited in the the wiki, but
yeah,
it's sort of
in my brain, it's Weep, but that's probably just my brain doing Weep for Manetherin. Anyway, let's hear them sing it, the Emmonsfield Five, or the Two Rivers Five in the show.
He bought the land with their blood long ago. Long ago. Oh, sing of Manetherin. Oh, weep for the blood of Aemon.
Cry for a minute. This is like my Wicked. I mean, Wicked's obviously my Wicked, but this is the one I cannot not sing along with these songs.
It's your Witch's Road also.
Right, The Witch's Road is also my Witch's Road. But what did you... This is a very folk song tied to the history of the Two Rivers. What do you think of this one?
So, a few things jump out to me. I want everybody to just think of that Oh weep, and this kind of, I forgot what's the first line we just heard? Do bum bum ba dum bum. There's this bum bum bum. Just remember that the melody started with it's first. Matt sings a couple lines by himself, vaguely in tune, and then everybody else joins him.
The new Matt is a really good singer.
Oh, is he? All right, we get to hear him. So just remember this bum bum kind of thing. You're gonna hear that in some of these other things. So this is very, you said folk influence. This actually sounds a lot like an African-American spiritual, honestly.
Yeah, you think
there's something bluesy about it that the other ones don't have. Manetherin. I don't remember what the line is.
Manetherin.
There's like a bluesness to it. It's almost, it's mostly what we would call a pentatonic scale. So shout out to a Nevermind the Music episode featuring, very irrelevant to this, Miley Cyrus's song Party in the USA, where we talk about a pentatonic five-note scale. This one is almost completely pentatonic. It has a few moments that aren't, but that's a very common folk scale. But when we have that kind of bluesy melody with the, we call it antiphony, the oh weep, the back and forth call and response, that's a very... a thing we hear in a lot of spirituals. West African music does it a lot, and so African-American, Southern American music does it. Obviously it happens in other styles too, but like our cultural references for, you know, the American audience, it's kind of going to come from that. So this one feels different from the other songs we're about to hear because it kind of feels like it's rooted in that, which is not what I would assume when you're saying, oh, make some music for the Two Rivers folk songs. It wouldn't be that. I feel like most fantasies would go, let's go to kind of Celtic references or Appalachian references, and we're getting something different. And I think it's cool. I like it.
Yeah. And maybe because they have tied up, you know, more Celtic influences with, say, the Tuathon, who they have having an Irish accent. And, you know, for instance, New Matt is Irish and he has to take off, you know, go with a different English accent to play the character. So they are purposely leaning away from Celtic. And because in the books, the characters in the Two Rivers are described as you know, having deep tan skin, dark hair and eyes. Maybe that's, we can see by casting that they've sought characters like that. And you know, we also know from a lot of, for instance, we know Shinar and Malkier, they has a lot of Korean influences because they cast Daniel Henney and he's Korean. So...
But it's also mixed up, right? Because, who is the American stand-ins? It's the Sean Chan, right? And so why is it the two? It's just sort of a musical vibe.
And drag. And,
right, that's right. We should have, are we going to have some like mountain music from, you know, Kentucky or bluegrass or whatever for them? I don't know. But like this felt sort of like a Southern American spiritual to me in a way that the others didn't. So
let's
I don't know that it means anything. Just is.
Yeah. Let's contrast it with the other diegetic song from season one, which is The Man Who Can't Forget, which is sung by the Gleeman Tom Marillion. And this is how that one goes.
I can still hear the way that he cried for the ones he had lost. He saw them in the rivers, he felt them in the rain.
Bum, 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 bum. Same start of the phrases, by the way. It's interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was curious if you saw any, because this is still Tom Marillion's from Andor, but he's from the other side of Andor, you know, not this isolated mountain community that used to be Manetherin. So Weep for Manetherin, I suppose, is an older song, but this is one that would have Andorran roots as well.
Do we think that this is written by Tom Marillion?
Or
is this a song everybody knows? Because I know they're kind of like, especially in the book, he's...
Yeah.
I think I associate Tom Marillion more with epic poems he plays.
In the books.
He does, or he doesn't?
No, I don't think that he writes the songs in the books, but he does. He'll... Or maybe he wouldn't sell new songs as old songs. But I think also he plays to the crowd. He's like, these are the favorites, you know.
There's another Gleeman we meet named Jason that is more associated with being a composer and a musician's musician. Whereas I think Tom is kind of more like Homer. Not Simpson, but the Odyssey Homer. Like storyteller, right?
Right.
This song, I feel like musically in the first season they were trying to do... We are not doing the folk Irish kind of British Isles filking kind of, if I'm using that term correctly, kind of vibe. We're going with an Americana sound. So this one feels kind of country or folk Americana. He's got a guitar. He does not have one of the, you know, we can talk later about the other instruments that occur in the series, but harp and flute are the two that Tom's associated with. And it's not that. It's a guitar, which is not something that was invented until the 1800s on Earth. So they went out of their way to give a different vibe. It doesn't feel as spiritual kind of blues influenced as Sing for Manetherin does. But this kind of minor key, simple guitar strumming, husky, raspy voice performance does feel sort of almost outlaw country kind of thing.
Yeah, I was going to say the tonal quality is quite bluesy, even if maybe the melody isn't per se. I mean, you definitely know the definition where those lines are drawn better than me. Okay, so that brings us to season two. We really only had one diegetic song, and it's not the typical, it's not a sung song the same way that these other two were. And this one comes from a very different source. It comes from the Ogier, who have this talent of singing to wood, to plants, to help them grow. So we hear the Seanchan force L'Oreal to perform for them, and this is what we get. That's giving me monk vibes.
Well, it sounds a little bit, because it's extremely low, it's in the sort of vocal fry strobos range. It has a little bit of that Tibetan throat singing vibe. He's not singing harmonics above his voice, but the score is interacting with it in a really dissonant kind of overtony way that kind of evokes that. This one's completely pentatonic, right? So notice again that it starts with the same figure that all of these pieces, including the fourth one we haven't talked about, all start the same. It's very interesting. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what that means. But yeah, this has totally a different vibe. This sounds like magic, right? It's not a song in the same way that's meant to, I don't know if it's a processed voice or what, or if they just got a singer with an extremely rumbly voice, but it's supposed to feel a little bit different, right? This is almost like the stone singing or something in Rings of Power. I'm trying to remember what they called it with the dwarves.
Right. Yeah. I think it is stone singing.
And it doesn't sound even like it's in the space. Like the music is mixed differently. Loyal's voice feels all reverbed out in a way that doesn't sound like you're staring at him 3 feet away, whereas everything else is really dry when we're hearing, like, Matt sing from an Etherin. It doesn't sound all boomy like this, right? And it's not just because of the room. It's because there's a magic happening. Even though this doesn't have anything to do with the power, right? Isn't there? This is something else, tree singing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an Ogier power, but the Ogier are, you know, we'll have to do a lore cast about that sometime, but nobody completely knows where they come from, and some people say they're aliens.
Oh wow!
From another planet.
That's yeah. I think that's a theory. I don't know what that's founded on, but
no. I mean, that's something we'll have to get into. I'm sure. Obviously, Loyal's already brought up the longing, so we're gonna have to visit a steading. If not this season, definitely next.
Right.
And the steadings are where Ogier come from. For anyone,
or we lose Loyal.
Yeah. Okay, and we'll pause the conversation for this public teaser there. In the Supercast and Patreon feeds, we continue on for another 40 or so minutes talking about the new song introduced in this episode and how that ties in with the previously discussed songs musically and thematically and what it means for the lore. If you want to hear the rest of that and you don't yet have access to these feeds, to the Supercast and Patreon feeds, and you're also interested in, you know, our lorecast on geography and the timeline of this world and the rest of the lorecast coming this season, not to mention the show guide with character guides and other guides and episode recaps, and of course, no ads, there are two options. To access that, there's the monthly subscription options for people who want the extra Wheel of Time content, but also extra Severance and Andor and other show content, plus the other monthly extras like Second Breakfast and the 11Z's Movie Club. And the other option for those who only want the Wheel of Time content for a one-time $10 fee, that's for the whole season plus previous episodes ad-free from last season. Then there is the one-time season pass option, and you can find links in the show notes for both of those. If that's not of interest to you, then great. Well, thanks for hanging out with us and letting us talk music for a little while, and we will be back on Thursday with the breakdown of episode 5. Do check out the link tree in the show notes for links to the affiliates. You'll also find links in the show notes to the Nevermind the Music feed, but also specifically the Party in the USA and Pentatonic Life Transitions episode that ties into this one. You know, Mark kept talking about the pentatonic scale. He breaks it down more there. And Nicole also talks about, yeah, actually thematically, it ties in rather well from the psychology angle. And of course, there's also a link to the Discord where we are discussing Wheel of Time. It's getting nice and lively there. And we definitely want your feedback about the show, about the podcast, about anything Wheel of Time. We have moved the feedback episode to after episode 5 just because it's been a really crazy week for John. So that just works out better and gives people more time to catch up after that big 3-episode drop. So if you want your feedback to be discussed as well, please send that to WOT@thelorehounds.com. And thanks so much again. See you on Thursday.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions, feedback, and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all our episodes at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Nicole, did you ever notice how The Sign by Ace of Base has really strange key changes?
I did not, Mark. I'm a real person.
Well, let me tell you about it. I'll let you talk about neuroscience gobbledygook.
Yes, I thought you'd never ask.
This is the Nevermind the Music podcast,
where one psychologist
and one musician
deep dive into the songs you love,
so you don't have to.
And there's plenty of time to get off topic.
From Semi-Charmed Life to The Way You Move.
And who could forget The Crossroads?
Is it The Crossroads or The Crossroads?
Save it for the episode, Mark.
Listen to Nevermind the Music
wherever you get your podcasts.